Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
So today's guest is a voice you may recognise as a friend of the show. She's the rom-com queen who I hear comes in now and then to teach Oliver and the team what real love looks like on film. However, along with being a rom-com aficionado, Vicky is a best-selling author, having explored where family meets reality TV in her debut, Reality Check. Today, though, she's joining me to talk about her new book, Long Story. Vicky Notaro, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you here. I was listening to your podcast, actually, and I really, really like it.
You must come on. I heard you saying that, why haven't I asked you on? Well, here's your official invitation.
Well, I'm not sure I'm the expert in rom-coms.
As long as you've one film that you love. What would it be off the top of your head, a rom-com you love?
Oh gosh, you put me on the spot. I think How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days
Perfect.
Is one that stuck with me.
Okay, I like that.
I don't know why it stuck with me, but
there you go.
I'm a Matthew McConaughey fan.
Okay.
I mean, who isn't? All right.
Okay, consider yourself invited. It's happening.
Okay, well don't quiz me too deeply on it. But look, congratulations on the book published by Sandy Cove, of course. I know that your previous book, Reality Check, it came out around this time last year. So
yes.
You've been busy.
Yes.
What's the writing process like for you? Do you lock yourself away and don't let yourself out till you hit a word count? Or how do the stories and the writing, how does it all come together for you?
Well, I'm always working about a year in advance. So I finished Long Story. Well, I finished the first draft of it around this time last year. And then I was kind of tweaking it over the summer. So I've actually written a whole new draft of a new book since then. So it's
You're
quite
productive.
But you know what? It's kind of that and the podcast are what I do full time now, which is I'm very lucky to have that kind of working life.
Because your working life has changed, hasn't it,
in
recent years? Talk us through that.
So I was a magazine editor for a long time, since I was 26, I think.
Is that a glamorous job as it's depicted in media?
Not as glamorous as it's depicted, but it definitely has its moments, you know, and it definitely informs what I do now. I kind of left that at the end of 2022. I was editor-in-chief of Stellar magazine.
Big move, and big decision.
Yeah, do you know what? I'd been doing it for 16 years at that point, since I was barely 22 years old. And it was, you know, I just saw that the print industry had changed massively, like really hugely over that time. And I kind of said to myself, you don't know how to do anything else, you know, like what else? If print kind of goes away or exists in a lesser capacity, you don't know how to do anything else. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take some time and figure out anything else that I could possibly do. And really serendipitously, the book opportunity came along at the same time. So,
and I mean, I have had a small little experience of writing fiction, and it was a children's book I wrote that was like an adventure. But I found, even though it was for kids, I found the whole world of stories, of characters, of story arcs, character arcs, all that stuff quite intimidating. And it was a big learning curve for me, even though it was in a children's environment. How did you find moving into writing fiction?
Yeah, I guess I had the characters in my head first. Mm. So I watched a lot of Real Housewives during the pandemic. Almost too much, one might say.
And we won't hold that against
you. Do you know what? It was
I'm
on
a
great
big
research.
Setting Sunset fan, so
okay.
We got to have these indulgences.
You get it. So I was visited by this character of Desi Daniels, who is an Irish kind of housewife style character. And from there on out, I just kind of just kept imagining these people as if they were real. And when it came to Long Story, I really wanted to talk about friends and friendship. And, you know, I was just thinking about women my own age in their late 30s and just how they might interact with one another. And yeah, the characters kind of come first and then the plot second.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was talking to my wife, because I was reading your book, and I was chatting to my wife about it, and I was saying, you know, I get the impression women's relationships are far more complex than us blokes. I think if this book was about men, like, the book would be 3 pages long and it would be like, called into Darren.
Yeah.
He didn't seem like himself. I'll catch him next week. that's pretty much the book.
But that's
you could get 300 pages out of
this
it.
This is it, yeah.
Yeah. So why do you think, and we'll get into the story of the book in a second, but why do you think female relationships have that intricacy? Why why are they so different, do you think?
I just think they're really complex. I think the female brain is so different to the male brain.
You think?
And I think we expect a lot more from our friends as women. I think we're raised in society to see friendship, especially female friendship, as this really important thing. Like when I was 10 years old, the Spice Girls came out with a song that literally is like, you know, friendship never ends. And then the show Friends was huge. Sex and the City was huge. So I think for me growing up, I was always fascinated by female friendship. And I'm an only child, so my friends were like my sisters almost. And I think we expect that when we have great friends as children, that they'll always be our friends and they'll always be there for us. And I don't think we put the same work in to platonic relationships, perhaps, as we do to romantic ones. And that's where the idea from the story came from. I also watched a lot of Beaches, you know, the movie Beaches. I watched that every single weekend as a child on videotape with my cousin. And that really got into my psyche, obviously.
It sure did. Well, we're glad it did, because you've created these characters. So this it is a story of two friends. Tara O'Toole is an A-list celebrity. Oscars under her belt and all the tabloid attention to match. And then there's Alex Curtis, her childhood pal, who's now an internationally renowned podcaster and celebrity gossip hound.
Yes.
So it follows the dynamics of their relationship. Of course, there's a love interest involved that makes things a little bit skewways for them. But I love the way that you have approached it from both their perspectives and it flips between Tara and Alex. Tell us about that decision.
It was really important that they both had a voice in this because, you know, obviously they're going to have some troubles along the way. And I didn't want one of them to have more kind of, you know, of a say in who was right or who was wrong, because realistically, there's three sides to the story, each of their sides and the truth. And, you know, neither of them are right and neither of them are wrong.
It's but isn't that how relationships work?
I mean, that's it.
There's no relationship that where people don't see it through a different lens.
Exactly. And for the sake of the plot, it just made it really pacey to go back and forth between the two of them all the time in their own voices. So it was very important that they each had that distinctive voice and also that the action moves very quickly.
Yeah. So, I think you write great dialogue as well.
Thank you.
Like it's I say dialogue heavy, and that's a positive, I think, because you do write it so well. Do you hear these conversations in your head?
Yes.
And it just, I get the sense, I was like, I bet you this sort of just flows out of her.
Do you know what? This novel really did. I felt like I knew Tara and Alex so well that I could hear them in my head and that I could hear them talking to each other. And, you know, every interaction I've ever had with a female friend is obviously locked away somewhere in my subconscious. So
I was wondering, do you ever get pals? Because I'm in one of my books, I refer to someone who was throwing a tantrum on a golf course. And my brother's like, that's about me. And I was like, it's actually not.
No.
Check your ego. But do you find that maybe friends go, did you paste that? Is that me?
They don't say it to me, but they, do you know what? I have a really strangely good memory. So I think most people don't remember these things that I have kind of stored up, but they never come out as they were. Do you know what I mean? They come out as a version that's been through my brain. They're not kind of exact, but the experience lives with me and then that tends to come out on the page.
Yeah, yeah. You do talk about different things. What's interesting actually is that the characters, even though they're the same age, they are at different places in their life in terms of family and work and all that kind of thing. Do you think it's actually an interesting time to be writing about that, because it reflects how midlife has changed?
Absolutely.
These days it's different.
So these women met when they were 11 years old and they were very much on an even playing field. And then Tara's career takes off when she's quite young. You know, she's kind of motivated to become, she's very ambitious. She wants to become this big actress, this big star. And she knows that you have to kind of do that when you're quite young. And her career takes her, she's won an Oscar before she's 25. You know, she's this hot property. Whereas Alex goes to college and, you know, she's a bit of a slower burn. But yeah, I think that's very true to life. I think I'm 39 years old and a lot, like, I don't think there's any of my friends that are in the same situation in terms of, you know, relationships and family and career. So I think being a 39-year-old woman in 2025 is different than it's ever been before.
Do you think that's a positive, that we're not sort of forced to follow the same milestones by a particular age? Like, I'm thinking back to when I got married in 2003. You know, and I was kind of conscious of, you know, I think what age was I, 30 or close to it anyway. And I was conscious that, oh, by this time I should be doing this and by this you're doing this. And, you know, but I think that has changed a bit now.
I think it has changed both for better and for worse. But I love that there's no kind of prescriptive timeline that we have to follow anymore. You know, it's very much go at your own pace. I mean, women always have the fertility, the biological clock hanging over them. But there are things, if you have the money, that you can do to kind of prevent father time from marching all over you. But yeah, I mean, I think, like
red
I said,
wine and dark chocolate, yeah, apparently. That's it. That's what we've learned today.
Yeah, I heard.
Just keep chowing down on that.
Yeah, I think it's a great time to be a woman in many ways, I think. But like everything, the swings and roundabouts, isn't there?
Yeah, you touch on the parasitic nature of celebrity gossip in the book as well. And I guess, given your background as a journalist and magazines, not that you ever engaged in that, but it's part of that.
Yeah,
comes
I
from
consumed
that world.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, have you seen the nature of that kind of thing up close, given your previous career?
Yeah, I have. I've had, you know, friends in the industry who've had their bits circled in a magazine and, you know, like, you know, cellulite or whatever. Stuff like that thankfully doesn't happen anymore at all. Nobody would stand for it. But I've witnessed it over the years. Yeah, I've been in a journalist.
I think it still does happen, though, particularly in terms of women's appearance and how
it does, but it's more insidious now. In the past, it was literally in a magazine, it was like a big circle around what they deemed to be a dodgy bit, you know.
Yeah,
whereas now it's a bit more sniping. And
but maybe that sniping comes from now the viewer, the people interacting, the public, as opposed to an editor or a sub editor who goes, let's zone in on that.
Exactly. I mean, I always worked for very nice magazines. I worked for Kiss, which was the teenage girls magazine, that was my first job. I was there for 4 years, and the whole point of Kiss was to imbue the reader with confidence and self-esteem and information that they needed from a reliable, authoritative source.
Yeah.
So we never did that. You know, that was never a thing in my world, and I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
You know, I've only had nice jobs.
That's a phenomenon has it passed us by now, that girly teen magazine?
Yes, it has. And I think it's a lot to do with attention spans on TikTok, unfortunately. We tried to revive Kiss as a website a few years ago when I was back working for that particular company, and it just didn't take off, unfortunately. And, you know, advertisers are very cautious about working with teenagers, as they should be. So, yeah, it's kind of passed us by. I do worry a little bit about that.
It's kind of sad. I guess, you know, I used to get the male equivalent was Shoot magazine, was the football magazine.
Well, but good, it wasn't Nuts or the other ones, was it? No, it was football.
FHM and those things. Yeah, yeah. I guess, I don't know, maybe I dabbled in the that 90s lad mag thing, if I think back. But I was thinking when I was younger, when I was a teenager, I used to love the appointment setting of going to the news agents, you know, whether it was to buy your Wither and Chips or Dino and Dandy when you were small, or maybe one of the, you know, the football magazines or whatever. And I guess it was the same for girls as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And I worked there from like 2008 to 2012. So it was a real golden age before the internet really took over. Like I think we only had Bebo and Facebook then. So the audience were so engaged. They would tell us every month who they wanted on the cover. And if they, you know, they weren't on the cover, there'd be murder, like stuff like that. And yeah, then it went away quite quickly as soon as social media took over. So I think Kiss lasted until about 2014, 2015. But it had a golden era. You know, I think a lot of Irish women remember it very fondly, which is lovely to have worked there.
Yeah. Getting back to rom-coms, do you think they've been given a raw deal? I'm thinking, I guess my interests traditionally have been in comedy, and I always feel that comedy movies get looked over at the Oscars. They get passed over for the you know, the movies where people cry.
Yeah, the melodramas.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And I think maybe some like rom-coms, I think, bring so much joy and escapism to people.
Big time.
And sometimes they don't get, I think, the credit that they possibly deserve. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And that's why I started the podcast, You Have Me at Hello, because, you know, so many rom-coms are such comfort watches for people. And I think now more than ever, we need comfort. If we want to step away from our phone and just, you know, you can also read a great book, but you can, if you just feel like watching a film, I think it's so nice to switch on, especially that kind of golden era of the 80s and 90s. You know, rom-coms used to be recognised at the Oscars, like Cher won an Oscar for Moonstruck. You know, like they did. And even Beaches, that won Best Original Song, you know, so they'd get in there somehow, screenplays or performances.
Have they kind of died out as a genre, or are they under threat?
People keep trying to bring them back. You know, there was a big one a couple of years ago called Anyone But You, and that was based on Shakespeare, but that wasn't very clear. It was Much Ado About Nothing kind of reimagined.
Okay.
It was commercially successful, but it was a very quiet film. I think critics didn't love it. So I think people are crying out for a Nora Ephron or a Nancy Myers to come along and make a string of comforting, fabulous films. And, you know, I'm happy to oblige if any producers out there.
Well, I think in one way, Christmas overserves them.
And they're varying quality, right? At Christmas
time. Oh my
God,
most of them are muck. Yeah. What is your favourite rom-com of all time?
I think my absolute favourite is When Harry Met Sally. I think it's a classic, you know, film that both men and women love. It relates to both men and women, and it answers or it poses a question that can never really be answered. And it's, can men and women ever really be friends? I think it's a dynamite script, brilliant performances by Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal. I think that's up there. I also love You've Got Mail, also by Nora Ephron. Very dated now, though. The dial-up modem at the start just tells you that it's very dated.
Like,
you know, I've 100 favourite rom-coms. That's why we've only done 2 seasons of the pod. I'm working on the third at the moment, and there's still so much mileage to get out of it. So
if anybody this morning wants to share their favourite rom-com and why, you can let us know. 51551 or 0870 32 32 32. Would it be your intention to someday have one of your books turned into a movie? Is that something
that
would excite you?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, my degree is in film studies. Cinema is an early love of mine. Rom-coms are a huge love of mine. I mean, my books aren't strictly romances in generic terms, but they could definitely, I think there's enough action they could lend themselves maybe even to a series. So yeah, absolutely, that would be the dream. And it can happen whenever. Like, if you look at Marion Keyes' body of work, her 5 Walsh sister novels that she started writing 30 years ago, they're currently being made into a series for RTE. So, you know, it might not be right now. But
have you tapped into that support network of other female writers and other female Irish writers?
Yes, and you only have to look at the back of my book to see how kind they all are.
I noticed
that. Oh, they're incredible. Like, Marion's my hero, Patricia Scanlon, Kathy Kelly, and then even more contemporaries like Louise O'Neill's around the same age as me. She's been amazing. Yeah, it's honestly been unbelievable.
Do you think it's a good time to be a writer right now?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think especially the kind of books that I write, which are, I guess, commercial, contemporary, humorous fiction. I think there's not a whole lot of people doing a lot of that right now that aren't kind of straight romances. So I think, I think it's a sweet spot.
Did you get any helpful advice from these mentors who've been at your back?
They all told me to sign up. I don't know if people know this, but authors get paid when you borrow a book from the library. So it's a small amount, but it adds up. So they all told me to sign up for that and to, you know, say yes to everything and talk about my books as much as possible and always get the name of the book in there. It's Long Story.
Long Story is the book. Yeah. And lots of your messages coming in as well. Morning, guys. Richard Curtis, the king of rom-coms. Yes. British rom-coms are superior, says Khan.
They're pretty great. Especially more recently.
Rom-com Crazy Stupid Love, amazing cast and lots of mini stories.
That's my husband's favourite.
Yeah.
It's more of a masculine rom-com, I think.
Do you test out your storylines on your husband? Will he read some of your, you know, paragraphs and stuff that you've written?
He likes to read it at a very specific point in the process when my first draft has been read by my editor and we know what's going to happen for sure. You know, we know that, like, the structure is sound and the characterization is good. So no, he actually quite likes to be surprised.
Do you make him watch terrible telly?
He loves terrible telly. So no, his favorite thing to do is get on a plane and put on the worst film he can find. Like, he actually loves bad films, really bad action films, you know?
He's a man after my heart there.
I mean, I tested him very early on. I showed him Beaches without telling him how important it was to me. And that was kind of crafty, wasn't it?
That is a sneaky little test.
But
so this was early on. So if he didn't,
12 years ago, he passed with flying colours.
Wow. So if he'd gone, what a load of rubbish. Where's Jason Statham? That was it.
Exactly.
You wouldn't even be together.
Who can say? But probably not.
Yeah. Can you see people with Long Story? I think the colours on the cover, the way it's designed so beautifully, I could see it poking out of a beach bag.
Oh, that's the hope. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's people picking it up in the airport, maybe taking it on their holidays.
It's Instagrammable for sure. Like, the women that designed the cover are amazing. It's kind of an all-female team as well, which I love. My editors are women. You know, the design team, the production team in the UK, all women. And my publicist, like, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's a girly spectacular, it is. And the design is really stunning. So I absolutely hope people are packing it for their holidays.
Yeah. Well, look, I hope people are too. The book is Long Story by Vicky Nataro. And of course, you can check out her podcast as well if rom-coms are your thing. And clearly by the number of texts coming in.
Yes, I love this because Oliver is always like, he hates rom-coms. So this is great. The people are speaking.
Dermot, can you ask Vicky her honest opinion of Love Actually? I am the only person who thinks it's absolutely terrible, says Angela.
I think it's aged really poorly. I think when I first saw it, I think it came out in 2001 off the top of my head, or 2002 maybe. When I first saw it, I loved it. I thought it was, it took my breath away because I was, you know, a very young, impressionable woman. But I think it's aged like milk, if I'm honest. I think there's a lot of tropes that are really worn out. Like even the way they discuss the women's bodies and stuff like that is pretty crazy. And
Do you think rom-coms have changed over time or need to change? Because I guess the male, female, you know, maybe if you look at something like Made in Manhattan, where there's always an element of a woman who has to be rescued by the rich, wealthy man, you know, the sort of pretty woman type thing.
But she rescues him right back in Pretty Woman.
Of course.
I'm joking, no. That's a funny last line. I think that they are changing. And you know what? Perhaps that's why they're not as popular, because people do love a fairy tale. You know, whether we consciously know it or not, we've been raised on fairy tales.
But sometimes you can't say it out loud now.
You can't say,
oh, I'm waiting for Prince Charming to come, because that's
Well, you'd be
allowed.
A long time wait.
Well. Few and far between, Vicky. About a Boy. I've watched it so many times, says somebody. And also, When Brendan Met Trudy, so irreverent, heartwarming, and lovely, and Irish. Yeah. And John says, Terminator 2 is my favourite rom-com. Snap, John. The comedic timing of Arnie combined with the aching melancholy of Linda Hamilton as Sarah Connor is the perfect heart tug, John and Newbridge. Couldn't agree with you more.
I love your listeners. That was great. There's your rom-com then for the podcast.
And About Last Night with Demi Moore and Rob Lowe.
Oh, one I've never seen. Excellent. So few and far between.
Oh,
Last Night. Okay, adding to the list.
There you go. Well, check it out. You Had Me at Hello is the podcast, is Vicky's podcast. And Long Story by Vicky Nataro is published by Sandy Cove and is available in all good bookshops. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
For coming in to join us.